Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners, tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service, and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, my guest today, talking to me by telephone, based here in Brisbane, Gillian Hamilton is a lady that's coordinating a fundraiser for the NPY Women's Council out in Central Australia. This is the Larapinta Walk. Gillian, welcome to the program. How are you?
Great, thanks, Tiger. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's great that you're available at such short notice. You're organising a fundraiser for the NPY Women's Council for their annual meeting. Tell us about it. Well, what's your connection you're supporting and this fundraiser? What's got your interest here?
Thanks, Tiger. So my position is I'm a walker. I'm heading off to walk 223 k's in the Australian desert.
You're a serious walker, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah.
Yeah. In actual fact, what's really funny is that my parents couldn't get me to walk 2 kilometres to the mailbox to collect the mail when I was a young kid. I was very overweight and wasn't very keen on walking anywhere. So
that's a long way to the front gate, 2 kilometres.
Yeah.
You're obviously on a property.
Yeah, so I'm from land. I'm from a place called Somerton near Tamworth, which is the home of the Kamilaroi people. Mm-hmm. And I've made some friends early in the piece with the local Kamilaroi people from my local high school at Teal Technology High. I've had an insatiable interest in the First People of all nations from a very long time ago. And when I was a very small girl, I wanted nothing more than to meet the First Peoples of all the world because their history was so important to me. So, and we're so lucky to have such history in Australia with the first ever musicians, the first ever storytellers, and the first ever people who looked at the stars. It's just so amazing. Yes. To have such history in our land.
Isn't it? The first astrologists, the first environmentalists, and it goes on and on. And the general public of this country don't realise how fortunate, how big a deal that is.
It certainly is, and I was lucky enough to spend some time with the Black Card recently, and I learnt so much more as well. I just can't wait to be up in land up in the MPY area to meet the MPY Council and the girls to give us some more information and to learn more about country and about the Nakari healers and what we can do to help preserve culture for our First People for years to come.
For the benefit of listeners, where is NPY Lands?
NPY Lands actually collects a whole series of countries. So it's actually the WA, South Australia and NT groups all come together once a year for an annual meeting. So this is quite unique because the girls actually grab together and they exchange traditional knowledge. They practice traditional women's law through dance and ceremony. They promote the preservation of culture. They talk about education, social issues, and they work together once a year for a meeting which costs as much as $50,000 per year to gather people together. So we've been able to raise so far $50,000 for next year's council paid for. And we're looking to hit another further 50 to give more funding to the group to be able to have the MPY girls do the best that they can with that money and actually help preserve culture for as long as possible.
When did you start? When did you first engage with these women to spark this interest where you want to get in and support and raise not a small amount of money, $50,000, and you're attempting to raise it twice? I mean, when did you first get this? First engagement with the mob and that sparked your interest?
Well, there's a very interesting man called Tony Messenger who you can follow on Twitter as well. He's from CGU, and he, which is an insurance company, and he went up there and met the girls. He was lucky enough to be on land to be part of some of the meetings, and he came back to CGU and he begged for them to do the Larapinta Extreme Walk to raise money for this such amazing group of women. And I actually was able to, I know one of his colleagues who also works at CGU, and I had to be on the wait list to get on the walk, and unfortunately somebody wasn't able to make it, but fortunately I was able to get on the list. And so now I'm actually lucky enough to be able to be on country and meet these women in real life and actually learn more whilst on land. So I'm just can't wait for the cultural experience. It's just so amazing.
How long has this Larapinta walk been happening? How many walks have there been before?
So this is the first ever. This is the first ever, and they hope to do it annually. So it's really, really exciting.
And who's it aimed at? Who? How many people? Over what period? Take us through the plan for the walk, and what are people camping and swags and stuff? What's the situation?
Yeah, so basically we have to walk a whole total of 223 days. So it's a series of different trails on the Larapinta Trail, which is a national walk that people can do any day of the year. They can go up and do that as long as it's not too wet or too hot. People normally do it over 20 days, but we're aiming to do it in 10 or 11. So that's why it's called an extreme walk. We are supported by the NPY Women's Council, so they're going to bring us a little bit of water every couple of days, and they will bring out some food to us as well with the CGU volunteers who are also the other Larapinta Extreme Walk volunteers to help support us for some food and stuff. But there is a couple of nights and a couple of days where we have extended walks where we have to carry all of our gear and are unsupported. The theory is the first 3 days is physical, and then the last 7 days is pure mental. So if you can't handle it by day three, I think you'll be getting on the four-wheel drive going home, because it is a long way and it's very hot. There's no shade. It's in the desert. You have to carry all your water for each day, which can be up to 10 litres, which is a further 10 kilos to carry. And we've been training really hard. I mean, and it's not just flat desert. You know, there's lots of mountains and you know, elevations and declines and quite beautiful country to see.
How many people on the walk, and where does it leave from?
So there's 35 people on the walk that will walk together. It starts, we leave from Alice Springs on the 1st of May, and we hope to return. If we don't return, we're in trouble on the 11th of May, hopefully bring all our soldiers home. That's what we're really looking forward to it.
And is there a cost, a contribution? What's the, how does that work?
So we all pay for our own way. So we have to pay our flights there. We have to pay accommodation before and after. So basically we pay our way in, but we all have to raise money for the event. We've all collectively raised, we have a minimum $1,000 raise per person. I've been hunting all my contacts, and I think I've got a little bit of that. And what I'm really looking forward to is having some people coming and attending our charity night, which is tomorrow night at the New Farm Cinema.
All right. And what can people expect tomorrow night?
Well, I have an amazing up-and-coming artist playing. Her name is Taylor Young. So she'll be playing a rendition of her own songs and some other songs before the movie. So that starts at 6 o'clock sharp. You'll be entertained by Taylor. You'll also have a champagne on arrival. We have some food available, and then you can watch the movie Tracks, which I've chosen is about the lady who walked all the way across the desert with the camel, and she was assisted also, as we will be, by local First People. She wouldn't have made it without them, and I think we won't make it without our MPY assistance as well. So I chose that movie because, to me, it definitely suits. I'm looking forward to a really great day. And we've got a last-minute price for sale At only $25, and all the money from now on goes straight to the charity once the costs are covered. So we've got an opportunity to make some really good money for the MPY girls.
And how many people will be on the walk?
35.
35. That's a reasonable size group too.
Yeah.
And those people come from different parts of the country, I imagine?
Yeah, so we've got people from Victoria, we've got people from South Australia, we've got four walkers from Queensland, we've got, I think, a guy from Northern Territory as well. So we're all coming from all walks of life and all areas of the country, and we're going to walk together. And we're walking hard for the money. That's our tagline. We walk hard for the money. So I'm sure there'll be silly songs going along the way as well.
It sounds quite interesting. Now, there is no room for any more walkers, I take it. I understand you've got your full book on walkers.
We have a full book, but if there's anyone out there who thinks that they are fit as a fiddle and can ready to run, we do have a special that they can pay in for and it's tax deductible, obviously, for the company that wants to send someone along, but they have to be ready. We've all trained, with up to 35 kilos on our backs, walking for 30 kilometres on the weekends, and, last week, over the Easter weekend, our team walked 55 k's in the pouring rain on the Gold Coast Walk with all of our gear on. So it is a really harsh terrain, and if you weren't prepared, it would be unsafe for you to go. It will be a long walk because it is the conditions are harsh and the elevation is at times quite tricky. And yeah, you do need to be prepared for safety.
It'll be an interesting one. We need to get you to give us a report back when you finish. So we'll have to get you back and talk about the actual walk and stuff.
Yeah, look, I look forward to talk about my interaction with the NPY Council. I am so excited about meeting the girls from NPY and the Nakari Healers as well. We've got such opportunity that's been arranged by Tony and his connections. And for us, for me, I just want to raise awareness that we have such amazing history in our country, and we have to preserve this culture because this is the first people of the world, and these are the first people that have ever sung, ever told stories, ever looked at the stars, ever spoke of history, and we need to preserve this for the future. And for me, I'm really passionate about that, and I can't wait to share my journey and make sure I bring as many people along and on board to being open-minded and inclusive and making sure that we preserve our culture for the future.
The healers, they're the traditional healers, the Nunkaris.
They are.
There. Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that, right now in Australia, we're all about healing. We're all about, healthy living and healing. And these are the first ever, what we call now Reiki, is my sort of belief on, is what we think is Reiki. This was started, years and years and years ago in our country. And I've been reading the book about these wonderful healers, and I think that we actually get to meet them while we're there, and I actually have asked to have a healing. And for me, that is just going to be so special, I wish everyone I knew could come along because it is going to be such an amazing journey.
We have our own healers also here in Queensland, just because we're a bit lighter skinned and stuff, most of us. We have our own traditional healers here in Queensland too that are often called in to call down from up north to assist with situations and issues that arise from time to time. So it's I just want to make the point that it's not just the traditional healing is not just happening out in remote communities in remote parts of the country. It happens here in Brisbane.
Absolutely,
on a regular
and the
basis.
The way that they work with mainstream medical services is just amazing, and that needs to continue for years to come.
Oh yeah, it certainly does. Now tell me, how can people contact you if they want to book a seat for tomorrow night? And tomorrow night it's a movie, it's a glass of champagne when you get there, a movie.
Yep.
Be some nibblies or something, I imagine.
Absolutely, and some great music.
Mm. How can people contact you? How can they, how can they?
Look it up. So the best way to do it is to look on the Eventbrite website. So that's Event, E-V-N-T, Bright, B-R-I-T-E website, and search Larapinta. And on that, it's got a link to the actual buying a ticket, and we've got last-minute ticket sales for only $25.
All right. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock.
Yes. And I think, Tiger, if Hayley has a chance, maybe you guys could put on your community page that link and people could just click on there as well if for some reason they missed the fact that it's Eventbrite Larapinta.
No worries. I'll mention that to Hayley. Whereabouts is it again?
At the New Farm Cinema, straight on Brunswick Street.
It's on Brunswick Street?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let me see. This particular walk, it's a walking trail, is it?
Yeah, so it's a series of 12 different trails. So there's up to 20 Ks one day, and some days we do 35 Ks and a couple of days a little bit less. Mm. But basically, if people want to Google where we're going to go, if they Google the Larapinta Trail, it's a national park area, and it goes right alongside some of the lands. It's not on land, it's external, but it goes right alongside and goes to some of the most beautiful country through Ormiston Gorge, through Mount Sonder, and some amazing, amazing places, Stanley Chasm, Alice Springs Telegraph Station. We really are looking at some amazing land.
Some amazing sites. And do you intend for this to be an annual type of an event?
We do. Yeah. We do. Success, which we expect and really hope for, will be an annual event. And we look to make sure that we can support this for years to come.
Very good. Anything else you want to say?
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on, Tiger. And I really do believe in this cause. And I think that we're going to have such a great time. And I can't wait to make sure that we spread all the awareness that we can about our first people and preserving culture.
Good. You better get in touch with us when you get back into Brisbane after the walk, and once you've revived or resuscitated yourself or whatever, and we'll get some follow-up on how it all went, get a report.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, and thank you to all your listeners.
Thank you, Gillian Hamilton, and good luck with it. Well done.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye now. Gillian Hamilton, the Larapinta Walk. It's a fundraiser to raise money for the NPY Women's Council out there so that they can get together and meet and continue on to practice their culture and learn new technologies and things. But it's important that these women in this area continue to get together. And it's great to see the effort being made by Gillian, for one, but she's obviously got a few others involved. So it's really good to see. If my information serves me correctly, there's an article in The Australian today by Shane Duffy and Kirsty Parker. And it's regarding the 24th anniversary. Today is the 24th anniversary of the tabling of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody report in Federal Parliament. It goes on to say, next year, the report will be a generation old. And if there was some reflection on what's changed, you'd be in for a bit of a shock. The short answer, they say, is not enough has changed. Today, the nation faces an even deeper crisis than that interrogated by the Commission in 91. There were 99 deaths investigated for tens of millions of dollars and a report with 339 recommendations. But one of the things they looked into was the reasons that so many First Nations people were in custody. The Royal Commission explored the social determinants of incarceration and found that decades of disadvantage, oppression and fundamentally culturally inappropriate and at times racist justice system were the major contributors. While the past 24 years have encompassed a generation of promise and incremental successes, there have been some fundamental failures. Some sobering statistics. In the past 10 years, there has been a 57% increase in the number of First Nations people ending up in prison. 57% increase. We are now 13 times likelier to be imprisoned than non-Indigenous people. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people account for 28% of all Australian prisons, and yet we make up about 3% of the total population. And things are even worse for young people, who account for about half of all Australian youth detainees. So some 50% of all young people, all youth, in the criminal justice system are First Nations people. And again, we make up somewhere around 3% of the population of this country. But in correctional centres, particularly the youth detention centres, 50% of the population of these centres are First Nations people. Now, people are also twice as likely to be victims of violence. That rate's increasing, especially for women and children. In 2012-2013, the rate at which Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women were hospitalised as a result of family violence was 34 times that of non-Indigenous women. So there's some serious issues to be addressed. Serious issues. And we thought that Ricky Dick, as it's RC, what the Royal Commission into Deaths in Custody, RCIDIC, Ricky Dick. There was some hope that that inquiry might bring about some change. Clearly, there hasn't been enough. And then I might just shift my focus across to the constitutional reform that's being spoken about and pushed around and peddled and promoted. We're all hoping, all bar me and a few others. Some people out there, some of our own mob, are quite hopeful that this recognition in the Australian Constitution is going to do something magical and change things for First Nations people. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but that ain't going to happen. That will not happen. Again, it's an act of symbolism. And on the ground, it really means nothing at all. If we can survive or come this far, some 225, 227 years of colonisation, without being recognised in the Constitution, I don't see any problem with going on for the rest of my great-grandchildren's lives without being recognised in the Constitution and not having any serious impact on them. I don't have a problem with not being recognised in this Constitution. No problem at all. But there continues to be a lot of discussion. We don't even have a framework of words. We don't even have anything to look at, a draft. I think the cart is put before the horse. It's a bit like the threats of removal from communities. Again, the cart is put before the horse. No clear thought or any draft policies or what have you. Nothing is created, nothing is put up there for discussion. Again, it's all policy on the run. It was interesting to hear that news story, news report from Barbara Shaw. She spoke to me on this program a week or so ago. But for her to say that with the threat of closing down communities, you know, people, Alice Springs, for example, may well see an influx of our mob being moved in. And she mentioned about interpreters, and it's something that I never even thought of. Obviously, a lot of people don't think of the need for interpreters. The government is proposing to move a number of First Nations people off their communities. A number of those people, I'd say a majority of those people, English is a second or a third language for them. So by rights, they should be served, they should be assisted with the interpreter service. If they're going to be moved into to the urban centres. And there's a lot of things being raised. You know, how can this be done without any planning, without any policies? But then again, it's only blackfellas. And it's sad that that is the state of affairs in this country. Are they only blackfellas? You don't have to worry about them. It's real sad. We all call this place home. We all must know our history. And some of that history, like I said yesterday, the first people on the planet, that's my mob. That's Aboriginal people. That's Indigenous people. That's First Nations people. The first people on the planet. They're the first scientists. They're inventors. They're the first inventors. The boomerang, the didgeridoo, them sort of things. The musos and storytellers, the first people on the planet. The astrologers, the historians, the artists, first people on the planet to be doing these things. They investors too, eh? They'd be the first investors. They knew how to invest in Mother Earth, in the land, what was required to look after, to be the real proper custodians. They're the first investors. They knew what the returns would be if you made an effort to look after country. They knew that country would look after you. The first investors. The first environmentalists. The first miners. Yeah, mining. Our mob was mining ochres. There's evidence of that. It's well documented. And the list goes on and on. How does that feel to some of you mob, some of the listeners? Does it mean anything? It may not in your day-to-day life. But life ain't always about today. Life's about those generations ahead of us and learning from the generations behind us. But if you've got any thoughts, I'd be keen to hear. Does it mean anything to some of you mob? And if it doesn't, it may well do in the future. But remember, first people of the planet. Very, very fortunate for this country, for the people of this country all calling this place home. To be able to make that claim of the millions of people that populate the world. It's only you mob that call this place home who can say, we got the first astrologers, we got the first miners, we got all these firsts. It will mean something to you one day, I would hope. I've got Selwyn on the line from Cairns. Selwyn, welcome to the program. How are you, brother?
All right, thank you, brother. Yeah, you're talking about astrology. And dare I say, it's one of them. And also, yes, you're talking about that steel blade, eh? The theories about that. But dare I say, it's one of them pleased explain call, Tiger. Tiger, you would have seen that Uwali the other night.
Which one?
Uwali, about that rocket that was fired from Woomera. And they got the old people off that. And there was a lady that still... He's telling the story. It happened in 64.
Right.
And the welfare officers tried to get him off to a tribal area. Uwali, it was on NITV.
All right. Contact, it was called. I didn't see it, yeah.
It was called Contact. But anyway, in it, the welfare officer was trying to chase him. And they went, it's a bit of a soft plan, and they went into this little bit of bushes there. And what they done was, the It was a clear. It was really clear. It didn't look like rain, but they went out from those bushes and they put symbols in the ground. Bugger me dead, it rained.
Go on, yeah.
Yeah, and that Russell officer was telling the story. He had that sort of Alan Langer sort of glint in his eye, and he sort of saying to the people watching to try and work that one out. And when he told the story someone must have got the message and it did rain from the symbols that were written in the ground.
Yeah.
And straight away I started thinking, some of the crop circles are, the crop circles over in England.
Yeah.
And maybe whatever answered that the symbolism in the ground, maybe that whatever it is sending messages through the crop circle, and there's nobody around to read those messages.
Yeah, right.
In the crop circle.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I also read a book about Doreen McGraw. She done research down in Southeast Queensland, and she was looking to the Aboriginal symbols in some of the drawings out there or artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there with the closeness to the hieroglyphics in Egypt, Tiger.
All right. Yes.
Yeah, and as well, I heard Jeff McMullen talking about paintings up in Arnhem and Olin in the pyramid.
Yeah,
and I thought, you know, like just theories about like that old man that they found in Kalgoorlie with the air sample that he DNA went back to it was the original man out of Africa or out of Eden supposedly out of Africa. But I think if we were from all of that, where like the theory suggests, how is it that you know, in Noah's Ark, there's no animal that relates to our animal. Australian animals, we all have web feet and no hooves. And same way with the Galapagos. The animals originated there in the Galapagos, and the animals here originated. So why not man just being here all the time?
Exactly, yeah. There's no out of Africa for our mob, brother.
Yeah, okay, brother.
All right, Selwyn. Thanks for your call, brother. You have a good one.
Thank you.
Selwyn from Cairns. Yes, I don't believe there's anything in that out of Africa for our mob. But, anyway, that's some of the so-called experts, and my belief is that that's a way of diminishing our claims to country. That's what that is. It's a way of diminishing that our claims. But here's a song now by... And there was something else. There was, I think it's great how there are people like this morning, Gillian Hamilton, white fellas organising and in support of First Nations people. In this particular case with Gillian Hamilton, it's those NPY Women's Council mob raising money to assist with their situation, with having annual meetings and things like that. The rolling strikes that have been seen happening around the country and will continue to. Will continue on in support of people being left on community in Western Australia, wherever it might be. But in this case, the first example is Western Australia mob with under threat of being moved off remote communities. I think it's good that there are growing, the awareness is growing, the mobilisation of people is growing, where there are more non-First Nations people, more mainstream people, actually recognising and accepting the validity of our stand, of our claims. I think that's good that the numbers are growing there. It's fantastic to see. Got a caller on the line. Welcome to Let's Talk. Who do we have?
Yeah, g'day, Tiger. Sed here, mate. How are you?
I'm well, Sed. I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. I'd just like to enlighten some of the people, some of the listeners out there. I read this about almost 5 or 6 years ago, that the pure Aboriginal bloodline is absolutely pure in the fact that it has not been mixed with the Neanderthal like the rest of us.
Mm.
All the European blood and all other bloodlines have been mixed with the Neanderthal bloodline, apart from the Aboriginal, because they were on the land for so long and so separated that their bloodline is absolutely pure. I don't think anybody knows that apart from if you read it.
Single gene, eh? Is that it?
The single gene? Well, that is what it is. It is the pure bloodline.
Mm.
Their blood has not been mixed with the Neanderthal like the rest of the world, like the rest of the planet.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I was not surprised to find that out. I was not surprised
at all.
Because it is an ancient culture. And such a sweet and beautiful culture at that.
It is, and there are some, there are some good people around, and we just need to be able to see through the rubbish and stuff that happens and understand why, try and understand why things happen,
Yes, exactly right, Tiger.
Thanks for your call, sir. It's good that you enlightened us, Tiger. On that one. Thank you. You have a good day.
All right, you too, bye.
Righto, buddy. Thank you, Sid. Yes, the single gene, the pure bloodline. It's like no other human on the planet. There you go. We the first peoples. That's deadly, eh? That's deadly. Dale Rusker, good morning. Thanks for that comment, Dale says. We the first and most ancient law of the planet, too. Why do we allow an imposed law to determine our fate? Well said, brother. It's time for news. You join me tomorrow on your local First Nation station for Let's Talk.